Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Just a kid from the neighborhood, we're all kids from a neighborhood. Take me back to 96, I fall asleep with the radio on. Turn my pillow to the fresh side, I fall asleep, oh sleepy eye. I don't dream big, just the right size. Modesty comes from mom's side. You ever heard of a soft touch? You ever heard of a finger roll? Little sun, little raindrop, and you watch this thing grow. Follow me like a firefly at midnight in mid-July. Mixing blood and sweat and tears of joy. That's what I call the rally cry. Relentless, like a dog on a bone. We got gas in the tank to go all night. We got gas in the tank to go all night.
Max Kerman is the lead singer, primary lyricist, and one of the guitarists in a band from Hamilton, Ontario, called Arkells. Since first forming 15 years ago, Arkells have gone from teens coming of age during a Canadian indie rock boom to becoming one of this country's most popular rock bands, who fill arenas and routinely win Juno Awards. The band often uses its platform to highlight social issues and economic inequity in their communities and around this country. They do so via their work and also in their actions, and such themes can be found throughout their fifth and latest album, Rally Cry, which is out now via Universal Music. Max and I had a talk recently about the origins of Arkells, the economic and demographic shifts impacting Hamilton, growing up in Toronto near Fresca Pizza, being compared to Constantine's, becoming a big band, why they signed a statement in support of the Unistaten camp and Wet'suwet'en land defenders after the Royal Canadian Mounted Police raided their territory, and we talked about many other things. With the support of listeners like you who subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly pledges at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from CFRU 93.3 FM, Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in the beautiful city of Hamilton, Ontario, this is the 457th episode of Creative Control, featuring Max Kerman of Arkells, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Max, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you, Vish?
I'm pretty well. Long time no talk or see, I feel like.
Yeah, I feel like the last time, last interaction we had is I was making a very stupid indie rock joke on your Facebook in the comment section about your kids. It was Junior Panthers, and I thought I'd impress everybody and your friends and be like, are you talking about the Sloan song or are we talking about the man from Saskatoon? And I don't know if anybody got it. I was like, that was really stupid. In retrospect, I was like, what the fuck are you doing?
Well, you know, here's what happened. I mean, just so people know, my kids and I, we drive around together all the time. And every once in a while, Actually, a lot of the time we listen to music. And for whatever reason, they got into the Sloan album one chord to another, and we started singing their song, Junior Panthers. And there's like a woo part that I can't even do. You know, that's like the kind of a chorusy thing. And they got into it, and they tried to do it. So that's I posted that on Facebook, I guess. And then, yeah, people were like, oh, that's so sweet. Oh, the kids are so sweet. That's so sweet. And then you were like, nah, that's not as good as the band Junior Panthers. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I was like, not that mainstream garbage, like, you know, one chord to another. Like, if you're a real music fan, no.
Yeah, it was funny. I thought it was funny.
As long as you knew that it was meant to be a joke and that your kids are very cute. Yeah.
Did you get blowback for the people who were like, Max Kerman, what are you doing?
No, but I did wonder what they were thinking, what people were making of me and that comment. Most people were probably just kind of confused by it all.
Well, everyone knows you hate children. I mean, that's – and their joy, the joy they feel at music, that's a
thing.
That
is a big part of our brand, you know, with Arkells. It's like the band's like rock and roll songs, a pretty good live show, and they hate kids.
So where in the world are you today?
I'm actually in Toronto right now. We're just in the kind of the final week of sort of tour prep before we head out west to start the tour in Edmonton. So I'm just sort of hanging around.
What does that consist of, tour prep? Your band has escalated to a level that I can't almost relate to. All the bands I talk to are, that's not true. I shouldn't say that. They have a scale. They have things they have to worry about. What does your tour prep in Arkells consist of these days?
So, well, to be clear, like the tour prep for the Canadian tour is different than what the U.S. leg would look like. So it's like there are more decisions to be made on the Canadian side just because the rooms are bigger and there's just a lot more production and the days are, I don't know, there's more scheduling to be taken care of. So there's like a million little conversations going on about like, oh, when we get to Victoria, we have to like, and
yeah,
I like to be pretty involved in those conversations about, you know, how to make the day run the best and how to enjoy it the most. But we did rehearsals this week and, you know, we have kind of a big lighting rig and we're trying to really get the set list together so everybody's comfortable. And you know, sometimes it's just like literally just like walking around and like thinking about the set list. Like I think the whole band operates better when there's more structure. That's like one of the things I learned. I remember Mike D in New York City, our guitarist Mike D, got mad at me because after a show, we were driving back to Canada the next day and he was like, Max, like I gotta tell you something, it really throws me off when you're throwing in too many audibles in the show and I don't enjoy it, like, so you have to stick to more of a structure. And I respected him for telling me that, and I think all the guys, including myself to a certain degree, like knowing a general roadmap of, you know, what the show is going to look like and mm-hmm. So when it comes to tour prep, there's a lot of that kind of thing because no one wants to be kind of caught off guard in the middle of the show or even in the middle of the day. Like, people just like structure, I find.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing I think about being in a band and playing arenas. I imagine that's one of the biggest things. You kind of want to have a comfort zone. And, you know, this is why, do you guys generally play the same set each night with your lighting rig and your crew and everyone? Do you got to do that?
Yeah, there's less flexibility because, like, even I didn't even know this, but I guess for our lighting guy, Ryan Stumpy Campbell, he, it takes him like a day to program one song a lot of time. So if we're just like throwing in random stuff, like he can, you know, hit the lighting, he can make it up as he goes. But if he wants to have like specific looks for the show, it actually takes a fair amount of programming, which I had no idea. So
why would you care about the tech and the production? You're the singer. You're the rock star guy. It's true. A lot of people take that stuff for granted. You're not alone, I don't think.
No, but you know, we're lucky that we work with these talented people and they take their jobs really seriously. And I'm usually like, hey, I'm the dummy here. Just explain what you need and then we can all figure out how to work together. But there's going to be a few moments in the set that are going to be different every night. But we'll be kind of sticking to a central set list for the tour.
Well, I didn't mean to get too far into the logistics of this operation on some level, but I actually think it is kind of fascinating because your band, since we first met, has elevated to a level that I think is some people don't even realize it. You know that your band is you're primarily on this tour playing arenas, right?
Yeah, arenas and scaled down arenas.
This is a big deal. So Arkells became a big deal. When did this band form exactly? How long have you been in this band?
So the story goes, we all are from various parts of Southern Ontario. Mike is from Guelph. You live in Guelph, right?
I still live in Guelph. I'm calling you from Guelph. That's correct.
That's right. Yeah. So Mike D went to GCVI. Shout out to Greasy GC.
That's just down the street here. Was it you? I don't know if Mike was with you. You guys came to my house once and we filmed a little thing. I think when I was working at CBC, I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what if it was an off day or if you were playing some kind of Guelph show, but you came and we filmed a little thing. I remember that. And that you do have a strong history with Guelph, as I recall.
Yeah. And early festivals at Hillside. So anyway, so we're all from Southern Ontario. And on the first day of school, I went to school specifically to like meet people to start a band. I thought there'd be like a lot of like-minded people that wanted to play music. And I started talking to Mike. The great thing about like the first week of college is that everybody is sort of has to be friendly, I find. At least in my experience, everybody's just like putting themselves out there. And I started talking to Mike, and I profiled him as a guy that might play an instrument in my mind. I said, so what are you into music? And he's like, oh, yeah, I play. I was like, well, who's your favorite band? And he's like, well, I'm into this band that you probably haven't heard of, but I really love them. They're from Winnipeg. They're called the Weakerthans. Oh. And I pushed them. I was like, they're my favorite band, because Reconstruction Site had recently come out, and that record means so much to me.
Yeah.
And I had just seen the Weakerthans play at the Underground in Hamilton that summer before I moved to Hamilton. I'd kind of made a little road trip with my dad to Hamilton to watch the Weakerthans. And so I said, they're my favorite band too. And I said, do you play guitar? Do you play any instruments? And he's like, oh, I kind of play guitar. I was like, all right, you're in the band.
You're doing a vetting process at that point, really.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. Mike, sure enough, you know, he had like a starter Fender Strat with like the little home amplifier. And he had that with him. I just
bought my son one of those things for Christmas.
Oh, they're great. They're like they're handy and small and
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they sound good.
Yeah.
And then the next day I met Nick, who's our bassist, and I was wearing a Sam Roberts Band shirt.
Okay.
And Nick said, it's like, oh, I like Sam Roberts. And we started talking. I said, do you play an instrument? He's like, I kind of play the bass. And I was like, all right, you're in the band. And he's like, what band? I was like, we'll figure it out. So that was in the fall of 2004.
Oh, and, wow. So going back a ways. Okay. Like 15 years ago. This is like,
I'm 32 now and I was 17 then. So
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy. We started jamming just in the common room. We had our first gig with like an old drummer, like the original drummer, this guy Ev, who left the band after a couple of years at the McMaster Battle of the Bands. And then we started playing gigs in Hamilton at the Underground and at the Casbah and at Pepper Jack Cafe, which is now Absinthe, and Corktown, all these great little local venues. And it was a really good time to be in a rock band. I always feel really lucky that we were, 18 to 21 in like the golden era of Canadian indie rock, in my mind at least, which would have been, 2004 to 2008. And so I got to go see that was when I was an undergrad, and we got to see, the Constantines, Wintersleep, Joel Plaskett, Cuff the Duke, all these great bands come through Hamilton and play, for 200 people, and we were always there. And there was a great little scene there, a lot of awesome musicians that were going to McMaster or playing in bands in Hamilton. So I feel like, I always feel very lucky that we were a band and we had these guys that were sort of a generation above us. Like, showing us how to do it.
And your band at the time, I mean, what was it called? Arkells at that time?
We were called Charlemagne, actually. This is kind of a funny story. So Charlemagne was just the name that we needed to decide on for the McMaster Battle of the Bands. And that was our name for the first like 3 years as we were gigging in and around Hamilton. And we'd, go up to Guelph and London and Toronto for shows. But we had been sent an email or a MySpace message from another Charlemagne in Wisconsin.
I see.
And he said, if you don't change your name, I'm going to sue you.
Wow.
yeah. And
now, wait a minute. Charlemagne is a person's name. That's a name. isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but I guess it, well, the King Charlemagne. I think that's the
yeah,
exactly. The famous guy. But I guess it's for the sake of music, and maybe there can only be one Charlemagne. I don't know. I don't know how copyright law works.
Well, sure. Yeah, we don't have to go down that rabbit hole necessarily. But let's focus on your decision to name the band Charlemagne. You're saying you were in a battle of the bands. You had to come up with something. But
we were in an English class. We were in a class, and like Mike found it in a book or something like that. Like it was just like, oh, that word, then it's kind of cool. It was King Charlemagne. Let's go with that. And I was like, okay, it sounds fine. Kind of unique. I didn't really care that much, to be honest. But anyway, so when we were in the last year of undergrad, we started working. Joel Carrier we had an EP out, and Joel Carrier from Dynalone Records reached out and wanted to start working with us. And it was a very big deal for us because, you know, Joel's the guy behind Alexis on Fire, and he was the label for Bedouin Sound Clash and Attack in Black. You know, he's a big part of that scene. And we said to him, like, all right, that's amazing. Give us like 3 months. We'll graduate in the spring and we'll be ready to go. So one of the first things he wanted to do for us was put a flyer for our EP. He was going to put out our EP first, the Deadlines EP.
Yeah.
And he was going to put a flyer in the new City and Color album. Do you remember that? How like CDs would have other artists on the roster, like in the flyer on the inside part?
Oh my, I still have my like Murder Records inserts, like the flyer inserts. They just did like every record that they had or... Touch and Go used to do it all the time as well. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Young people would be like, what are you guys talking about?
Well, yeah, the whole everything we're talking about might be over some people's heads. But yeah, they used to do that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So we said, Joel, that's amazing. But there's something we haven't told you, which is there's another Charlemagne. And he said he's going to sue us if we don't change our name. So we think we need to change the name. And Joel said, oh, okay, well, this thing's going to the printer in 30 minutes. So can you tell me your new name? And we've been just kind of putting off this decision for months because we knew we'd have to change it eventually. So I remember distinctly, I was at the McMaster Student Library working on something. And then I like went outside and frantically started calling the guys. I'm like, guys, we need a new name. And I forget who came up with it, but it was like, we liked it. Mike and I lived on Arkell Street.
Uh-huh.
And we thought Arkells sort of sounded like a 60s doo-wop group, like the Shirelles or the Vandellas. Like that was just sort of where our mind went.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there's nothing like a deadline. Let me tell you that. I still believe that. Like there's nothing like a deadline to get creatives, you know, to make a decision or to get off their ass and actually do some work.
Yeah, to finalize song titles and things like that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. Like you have to like give me a hard date or else it'll never get done.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And within an hour, we were Arkells. And that's who we've been ever since.
There's a little tiny town called Arkell just outside of Guelph as well.
That's right. Yeah. Mike was familiar with that. Actually, it's funny, though, because we quickly learned that Arkells.com was this brewery in Swindon, England.
Oh.
And we were like, oh man, we would love to have Arkells.com. But, and we sort of have been like observing each other for the last like 12 years, but we've never reached out to each other. And so this past spring when we were in the UK, our UK tour manager, unbeknownst to us, reached out to them saying, hey, should I bring the band by? And they're like, oh, yeah, sure. And so we went by. And it was sort of like a meeting of like North and South Korea kind of thing where it's like we haven't acknowledged each other for – but finally we're going to like, you know, meet and see if we can get along. And it was a totally like lovely family that's had this brewery in the family's name for like 150 years. And I think the great-great-grandfather originally moved to Guelph. And
oh,
I think that road is named after him. And then he moved back. And he started this brewery. So I think that's where – I would imagine where Arkell Street in Hamilton is also from. So we got to meet the family lineage, which is kind of cool.
That is so strange. What a weird sort of connection there. So everything's cool with you and the brewery. That's good.
Oh, yeah. They gave us some swag. They hooked us up with some beer. It was all good.
Nice. Now, you mentioned that you travel to Hamilton from somewhere. And you mentioned Southern Ontario is sort of everyone's home base. Where are you from? Where did you come up?
So I grew up by downtown Toronto. My parents live just a little north of Kensington Market. There's like on Major Street, which is just like College and Spadina area.
Yeah.
I went to, it's funny, my public school was right behind the Silver Dollar.
Oh, yeah, right. That's right.
Do you know that if you're going around Spadina, Crescent. There's that school, Lord Lansdowne Public School.
I often park there illegally if I have to.
Oh, there you go.
I go to get my favorite pizza in Toronto is near there, Fresca Pizza. So I go, I'll just give them a shout out right now. And I
Fresca used to be called
Massimo's.
Massimo's. Oh my God, that was a dream. But once a semester, my parents would give me $5 to go get a slice. you know what's crazy about that place? It's run by these Vietnamese people.
Still and, is the same. They were with Massimo's as well. That's right.
They were. They took it over. Yeah. Not to get too much in the weeds here on pizza, but
we love talking about. I have recorded an episode of this show at Fresca. I'm happy to talk amazing. About it. Yeah, go for it.
Well, you know, yeah, it's so funny because like I'll go in there. And I'll be like, this is the same guy from when I was literally 5 years old. I'm not kidding. It's crazy. And but the craziest thing is that when I was seven, like Massimo's had the slices were expensive. They were like $4.25 or something. Like and this would have been in the early to mid 90s. And
right.
So that much for a slice of pizza was a lot of money. They've actually decreased the price since the midnight, which is crazy. It's now it's like $4 or something. It's like, do you guys know how inflation works?
Yeah, no, they're not friendly. They like me. I think they recognize me. Like I'm they're in a city with millions of people, but they seem to recognize me and they're okay with me. But they don't talk much, and I just say, I'll have a margarita and a brio, and they it's $5, and they give it to me, and I eat, and I always say thanks. Sometimes they say no problem or you're welcome. Sometimes they don't acknowledge it. That's just the way it is. It's just
slather the garlic oil on the crust?
They do it. I don't add any more. It's a greasy slice, but I think it's fantastic. So that's I sometimes after doing whatever I have to do in Toronto will make a point of going, or sometimes I will just make a point of going there first, and getting my slice. And then going to wherever I have to go to see a show or something. So that's amazing that you live in that area. So Toronto, you came up in Toronto and you went to school in Hamilton. And your band, Arkells, has become greatly associated with Hamilton. You are the pride of Hamilton. How does that make you feel?
it's really nice. The band was born in Hamilton. And it's where, three of us live. And yeah, it was a very formative place for us. And the reality is like, if someone was like, wait a second, you grew up in Toronto. And they're like, well, yes, that's true. But what are we going to say? Like, the band is from, we're the Arkells from Guelph, Hamilton, London, Mississauga, and Newmarket. Like, we can say, like, the band needs to be from somewhere.
Well, and there's no discounting the fact that it sounds like your formative years, in your late teens were spent in Hamilton. This is a city that's a part of you.
Oh, of course. And that's the thing. It's just like, we're named after the street we lived, Mike and I lived on in undergrad. We've since like moved downtown, like all like the formative moments of, going to shows and playing shows and meeting other bands and promoters. Those were all Hamilton people. So, we feel lucky for so many different reasons that the band's from Hamilton. But one of the main reasons is that we had a chance to open for our favorite bands in Hamilton, and I don't think we would have got those chances in Toronto because it's just that much more competitive. So we had a chance like to open for Cuff the Nuke or Tokyo Police Club, And to us that was always like a very important thing.
Well, I mean, I think it's. I don't mean to put you in an awkward position, but I do feel like the city does seem to have rallied behind you. They are proud of you.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I always think about it like this. It's like my friend Julian, my old roommate in Hamilton, he was getting married, and I was asking him like how he was feeling leading up to the wedding. I was in his wedding party. He's like, honestly, it's awesome for the simple reason that like everybody is really happy for you. Mm-hmm. Like so, like for like the couple weeks leading up to the wedding, everybody's just like, oh, are you excited? I'm so thrilled for you. And on the wedding day, people just have big smiles and are just like really happy to see you. And I feel like in Hamilton, I get a version of that like all the time.
Yeah,
where people are just like happy for us, and I try not to take that for granted because I'm just like, oh, like how most people don't get that kind of thing where people just like see me and like are like, oh, how's touring going? Oh, great show or whatever. And I think that's a really unique thing for anybody, and I try to recognized. It's just like, that's a special thing, because for people just to show like outward sort of excitement for you is a nice feeling.
It seems to me that your band's trajectory and your city of Hamilton's trajectories are kind of similar in a way, because in the last 15 years, your band has, as we've talked about already, it's elevated, it's escalated to your being one of the biggest bands that this country has ever produced, so to speak. And your city, Hamilton, is also now kind of in the spotlight, particularly for people with the housing bubble and the way things have gone with real estate around Southern Ontario, in Canada, around the world, in fact. But in particular, I've heard a lot in the last few years about people from Toronto looking to Hamilton as a place that they can afford to live in. And, you know, I've had various artists from Hamilton, various people from Hamilton on this show recently. In fact, just recently, Lee Reed was on this show.
Oh, cool. And that's awesome.
I'm a huge fan of his. He's been on the show a few times, and we talked about that, what the kind of economic displacement that all this Hamilton mania has kind of resulted in terms of how it's impacted the city. Do you have any perspective on that? Like, Hamilton is at least a national player now in terms of a big city that's on the come up, but that has its sort of requisite issues as well. Do you have any perspective on that?
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, I do. I also feel lucky that, you know, just as I was finishing school and, you know, with the band was starting to tour, and but we all kind of have to make some like life decisions, like, oh, are we going to move back to our parents' house, or are we going to, you know, stay together and live in Hamilton? Like, Hamilton had cool stuff going on. And I, you know, I grew up in downtown Toronto, and I still don't have a car like
yeah,
today.
Sure. Yeah.
And so like the idea of being in a place that like has some similarities to Toronto, that are walkable and cool local shops, like all the things I really enjoy about Toronto, like Hamilton was getting more and more of. So I do appreciate that it has, that is flourishing in that way. Of course, you know, when it comes to gentrification and growing pains of a city in transition, like those are complicated issues. But I will say that like there are people like Lee, for instance, and other advocates who are like hawks when it comes to that kind of activity. And whenever I see somebody calling out a city councilor or attending, you know, do you know Matt Jelly?
I don't think I do. No,
Matt and his brother, the Jelly Brothers, they do these amazing posters of local neighborhoods. You've probably seen the posters.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, he's another like local city advocate. The guy named Ryan McCreel runs a website called Raise the Hammer, and they're all just like really concerned citizens. And I think I try to look at communities as like a holistic thing, where it's like, you want the push and pull. I try to like frame it that way, where it's like, okay, you want, you know, some ambitious young entrepreneur to like open something cool. Like, I think that's good. But then you also want a hawk who's making sure that people that are, you know, underrepresented are being heard as well. So and that, I think that is how, you know, societies collectively move forward together in the best way, is if you have everybody at the table having conversations and keeping each other in check. I don't know. That's like, I know that sounds very optimistic and idealistic, but I do believe that there is room for a lot of different voices and sensibilities. But I will say that like the people that I personally admire the most are advocates who keep some of the big wigs in check, and I really value what they bring to the conversation.
Well, one of the reasons I felt comfortable asking you such a question, you know, which is sort of not a music related question per se, but your band and you as a lyricist, are you the primary lyricist in your band?
Yeah, I definitely start all the songs. I'll say that there's a healthy amount of collaboration and editing, like, cause Mike and, I mean, all the guys are so smart, but like, you know, Mike especially is a really brilliant writer in his own way. Like, he's just the kind of guy who can in school, like, sneeze out an essay and it's like beautiful prose. So they help a lot too. Like, I'm like, how do I say this better? Like,
yeah.
Or can I, you know, clean up the phrasing here? And, yeah.
Okay.
So, I start this. Yeah. The themes come from me.
So the reason I ask is because I feel like in your music, in your band's music, there is this socially conscious strain. There's a thread there where you mm-hmm. seem to be addressing issues like economic disparity and poverty. I know in your actions as well, your band has tried to do things to sort of help people who are less fortunate than yourselves and try to bolster communities. Do you have a sense where that sort of consciousness comes from, that feeling that you have a I don't know if it, you feel like it's a responsibility, but you seem to have taken that on in your work as an artist to help people who are struggling.
Yeah, I think I know exactly where it comes from. My parents, my mom's a high school teacher at Central Tech, actually. She's got the best commute ever. It's like a 5-minute walk from our house.
She's still active.
Yeah. I think she's going to retire this year, but yeah, she's been there for 20 years. And she teaches special ed for high school students. And my dad is a social worker by trade. He worked in group homes in Toronto for 25 years. He was a director of a group home, and he has since started his own little small business where he puts on conferences for people in the mental health profession. So if you're interested in, if you're a counselor or a psychologist who wants to learn more about PTSD or marriage counseling or anything, he organizes the conference and he'll bring in a speaker who's an expert in the field, and people sign up for those conferences. So anyway, so both my parents are pretty community minded, and you know, both their jobs are really to try to make our communities better. You know, if you're a social worker, and I find I'm really attracted to I think because of them, I'm very attracted to people who work in those fields. Like, I think it's like the most noble work there is, and I'm so grateful for people who have the instinct to get into that line of work, whether you're a nurse. My girlfriend Lauren is currently actually at a placement for her nursing degree at St. Mike's Hospital. Yeah, so I think between my parents and their friends who work in that world as well, like we have a song called A Little Rain, song for Pete, which is about our dear family friend, Peter Rosenthal. And Peter is a brilliant guy. He was a full-time math professor at U of T, but also a full-time social justice lawyer. So he's represented the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, First Nations groups, victims of police brutality. And that whole song is just a song for him. I love him. And he takes on the work with a sense of joy and passion that I really admire. So yeah, so I could go through like a long laundry list of family friends who do really noble stuff, and so I think that's where it comes from when I'm thinking about themes to write about. It's just that it's at the forefront of my mind, just because that's, you know, who my family is.
It does seem to me that you've taken on a rather noble stance in that regard, because you're imparting these ideas to a very large following at this point. Have you seen that have any efficacy? Have you heard from fans who say thank you for doing this or speaking out or helping others? It has prompted me to do the same. Can you think of examples of that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I think, people do like come to our music for the politics on it. And some people don't. Some people just like the fact that there's like guitars and Max yelling or whatever, which is cool too, which I'm into. That's great too. But yeah, I think, you know, right from the beginning, like, we have a song called He's No Champagne Socialist, which is actually, funny enough, about Peter Rosenthal's brother, Wally. Yeah, so the Rosenthals have two Arkell songs to their name. Oh, The Boss Is Coming. Like, yeah, and I think even with a song like, I get particularly pleased with the song like Knocking at the Door, which was like inspired by the Women's March, and just this idea that you have to be persistent and you have to, you know, keep your sort of eyes on the prize, so to speak, when you're fighting for justice. I love the fact that like there are people that have come to me who like say like, this is the thing that like got me through a certain event in my life. And because the lyrics, you know, speak to what I'm going through, but it's also can be played at a sports game. And then the people who maybe wouldn't have that at the top of their like agenda, like any of these issues are singing along to it as well. I like sneaking in my politics in sort of like a subtle way. I feel like Springsteen does that well too.
Yes, he does. And I'm hearing him when I listen to the new album Rally Cry, I'm hearing more Springsteen in you than I've heard in some time.
Totally. Yeah, no, there's definitely some references there.
Yeah, and I appreciate what you're saying about maybe where your conscious streak comes from. But, and I, you know, we're talking about this album, Rally Cry, or we're meant to be, and it's the new one. And it strikes me that it's quite different than, which is totally, this is normal. As a band has been together as long as yours has been, things change. But mm-hmm. do you have a perspective on where the sound of this band in terms of?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Where it started from, you mentioned kind of that indie rock boom in the mid-2000s in Canada, and how you mentioned a few bands there, and as you mentioned them, I can hear how all of them have kind of informed where Arkells came from. But when I listen to Rally Cry, it's anthemic. It seems like there's moments on the record that seem built for a stadium or arena sing-along. You know, you've got to kind of think about that a little bit more, I think, you know, in terms of engaging your audience. Do you have a perspective on how the band has evolved musically and how maybe that evolution relates to the scale of the band changing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think when we started the band, we were like, you know, obsessed with the Constantines and Canadian indie rock. And Oh, the Boss is Coming, like, is just like, you know, a Constantine song, really.
Have you heard that from people?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Probably in both a positive and negative way.
Sure, yeah. I mean, the Constantine's diehards in the beginning were like, who the fuck is this band? This is just a con-. And I was like, I agree. It is just a ripoff. But I'm more of a populist than Bri is. So, you know, where they fuck around with the form and, you know, and their tones are like a little more abrasive in a very cool Constantine's kind of way. I'm always like, I wanted to go down a little easier. So that's always been, even with Jackson Square, like when we were like just trying to rip off Shine a Light, in some ways,
yeah.
We definitely lean more on the poppy side of things. But I can tell you, when we wrote the Jackson Square, we were very, I think I'd say our musical palette was a lot more narrow. But I distinctly remember this moment working on the second record. I had just gotten into Hall & Oates. And I was really surprised because Hall & Oates is the kind of band that I would have just scoffed at like 2 years before. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait, do I like the sound of that synth? I hated that synth 2 years ago in, you know, You Make My Dreams Come True or whatever, or I Can't Go For That. But I was like, now I kind of like that.
Those are both very good songs.
They're both great songs, right?
And I say that as I think I have to check my credentials, but I'm a bona fide punk. And I think those are two good songs, if I might
right,
say.
Right?
Yeah.
So I would say that every album, there's been some version of that where it was like something I couldn't have predicted that I'd like has been added to my repertoire of things I'm a fan of. And I think the older I get, the more maybe at ease I am with myself and the more interested I am in different kinds of music. So yeah, I'd say the scope of what we were listening to was just a lot more narrow at Jackson Square. And we just, the influences have just piled on and
This populism you describe, I think you mentioned, you know, some of the Cons diehards viewed some of your early work as sort of derisively, and certainly some thought you were kind of copying that band. But you mentioned that you've always been a populist, and populism is a fascinating thing for artists. Like when I think mm-hmm. when we mentioned Bruce Springsteen already. On this record, I hear a little bit of U2 here and there as well.
Of course, I
hear the kind of bigger, iconic rock artists in your work on this album, Rally Cry in particular. And they all, those two artists, I can think of moments where they were, you described the Cons as being a bit more abrasive, maybe not thinking about being on the radio and whatnot. And I think Bruce Springsteen and U2 probably encountered that same thing. They both were, you know, very ambitious. They wanted their edgier music to reach as many people as possible. But then something shifted, and they kind of they went for it. They went for the radio a little bit, or the radio happened to them. It's hard to say. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my point is, when you say you're into populism, or and that's a streak within you, is that simply to sustain your band and its career, or is that to reach more people with your work? I know that's complicated because the two go hand in hand, but I think that's where some of the suspicion or derision comes from. Like, they're going for the radio, you know, kind of thing.
You know what it is? I think at least it comes from a really honest place. So my dad went to Wayne State University in Detroit, and he was a college DJ. And so we had like all of his vinyls from like the late 60s, like in our house as a kid. And the only thing I listened to until I was literally 12 years old was the Beatles and Motown. I was just obsessed with the Beatles and all the great Motown acts. And so that's where my love of pop music comes from. Like, I have no shame in like loving pop music. Hmm. So that's like really like probably the most informative thing before I ever heard of the Constantines was, you know, great pop songs.
Yeah.
And I still love great pop songs. So it has much less to do with like a yearning for being, because like, I think it would feel inauthentic, and I don't think I could do it if I was just like shamelessly, like there's so, like, even though this record to you, Vish, probably sounds like a sort of big pop arena rock record, there are a million other production choices we could have made that we're just shamelessly trying to appeal to the sounds of 2018. You know what I mean?
Like, no. I feel like, you know, your core, and this is an Arkells record by every measure, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just like, being perfectly honest, like, I love, like, nothing, there's probably nothing more gratifying in our job than a group sing along at an Arkells concert.
Yeah.
You know, like I fucking love that. Like, the first time, like, I don't think I knew I loved that until we started touring and people were singing along to our song John Lennon.
Yeah.
I was like, holy fuck, this is crazy. This is the coolest thing ever. Like, can we do more of that? And the thing is, you want to make interesting music, and you want to, like, you know, push yourself, and you don't want to make anything that sounds derivative, because otherwise it just wouldn't make the cut. So the trick is, like, how do you create those moments of sort of unity in like whether people are singing along in their car or at the concert, but also do it in a captivating way. And I think that's the secret sauce to a great pop song. There's a lot of terrible pop songs, but there's also some really great ones. If you go through, like, the Clash have a lot of great pop songs.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Stevie Wonder does, Bruce Springsteen does. And there's a lot of pop songs that I love from this year too. So yeah.
No, I hear where you're coming from. I mean, in terms of the content on Rally Cry, you're getting into some pretty dark and heavy stuff with songs like American Screams, People's Champ, which I kind of view as this dialogue between, or it's a description of the American president, but also Hillary Clinton. This, like, seems like there's like a little dialogue there that I didn't realize until last night when I was thinking about it a bit more. You're getting into kind of American politics with songs like those. What spurred that on?
You know, we spend a lot of time touring in America, and our band loves talking about whatever Trump did today and, you know, the dialogue between the left and the right, and the growing tribalism that's existing. So, yeah, it's just like really at the forefront of our everyday, you know, just the conversations we're having with each other. And we listen to a lot of podcasts when we're on the road. We're always sending each other articles. So I think that's, you know, that's really what, you know, had me going in that direction.
Like political podcasts?
Yeah. The Slate. Shout out to the Slate Political Gab Fest, which is which is my favorite. But also, you know, Ezra Klein. We love Ezra.
The Vox.
The Vox editor guy. And also The Daily and Today Explained. Like, all those ones are awesome.
So you by the way, last I heard, you were involved in a podcast, aren't you?
Yeah. We my friends Mike and Shane and I have a podcast called Mike on Much, and there are a couple Hamilton guys, and it's more of a pop culture podcast. It's much stupid, much dumber than the than the ones I just mentioned. I don't think it's above my pay grade to talk about politics for a podcast. So yeah, we just do interviews similar to this, actually, with artists, and then we also just more of a chance to catch up and just banter with each other.
Podcasts have really taken over band life, haven't they, when you're traveling together?
Oh, it's the best kind of conversation starter when you're meeting another band, because there's a good chance that they're listening to podcasts, and it's like an opportunity not to talk about music.
Yeah, you know, it's like, right.
What podcasts are you into? And then you can kind of get to know the person a little better that way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I did mention Springsteen, and I just wanted to ask you a couple of quick questions, because mm-hmm. particularly on Eyes on the Prize, there is a breakdown that is so, you know, early Springsteen that is unbelievable. What is your favorite era of Bruce Springsteen, if I might ask? Because I have a real soft spot for The Wild, The Innocent, The E Street Shuffle. Like, that's record.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so that record is probably lower in the rankings for me, but I do love the first one. I love Greetings a lot. And I mean, anything from the 70s is probably my favorite. I'd say my favorite record was Darkness on the Edge of Town, though. There's something about the quality of that recording, like late 70s, that I really love.
Yeah.
Just
kind of has a punk edge to it.
It's totally.
Yeah. But are you a Born to Run person?
I mean, of course. I do. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah.
Just making sure. Because, yeah. I mean, your physicality as a performer, you're really going for it on stage. Every time I've seen the band, whenever you do like the Junos or something, that's a big part of it. Do you know where that comes from exactly? Who are you inspired by there?
Well, I'd say I'm a real collection of my favorite frontmen, I'd say. So I'd say in the early days, I was definitely trying to do some combination of Bri meets Joel Plaskett.
Ah, okay. Bri Webb. Brian Webb.
Yeah, Bri Webb. Yeah. And I had like a hollow body that kind of looked like Bri's guitar. I had curly hair, so I tried to like move like him and hold the mic the way he snarls at it. But also, I love Plaskett's probably my favorite frontman. Probably my favorite Canadian frontman, honestly. His ability to tell stories and entertain, his disposition, I probably relate to a little bit more.
It's a very Canadian disposition, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's a little silly, but his ability to tell stories as he's playing guitar and to like kind of drop references through the set, and then by the time he gets to the final song, it'll all make sense, kind of thing. Like, I just find he's brilliant at that.
I feel like there was a time where he felt omnipresent, and now I feel like Joel Plaskett is underrated. I that's how I feel. Like, something he's been sort of absent a little bit, but it feels like. But I agree with you.
Yeah, no, I saw him in December at Danforth, and it was awesome. It was as good as ever. And then of course we toured with the Tragically Hip, and watching Gord and the way he moves his body, but you know what, the cool thing actually about getting inspiration from your heroes is that, you know, you become just another version of, you know, of the five of your five favorite people, and that kind of becomes who you are.
And I was
struck, I did this charity show in December for Paul Langlois. His wife Joanne was doing a fundraiser in Kingston for a hospice, and the Skydiggers played.
Yeah, my friend Jesse Bell Smith is in that the Skydiggers these days. Yeah.
So I was watching Andy Mays, the great Andy Mays, perform, and I was like, wow, like he's kind of doing a Gord thing with his hands, and I didn't really, you know, notice that before. And I called the next day. I was on the phone with our longtime booking agent, Jack Ross. And I was like, Jack, because Jack and Andy are dear old friends. And I said, do you notice that like Andy kind of does this Gord thing? And then Jack,
I know where this is going, by the way.
And Jack goes, no. Gord was doing an Andy thing.
That's exactly right. Andy is tremendously influential. Another underrated and gifted Canadian songwriter, Andy Mays of the Skydiggers. My goodness,
I love that so much. Where it's just like, and I think there's something kind of beautiful about that. And of course, even though way more people know who the
Hip, they know the Hip.
They know the Hip, and they don't necessarily know the Skydiggers. It's like, you know, Gord would be the first person to say, oh, Andy's my guy. Like, that's the guy who I looked up to. In the same way that I'm the first person to say, oh, I was just trying to be Brian Webb when we put out Jackson Square.
Well, I mean, it was always magical to watch when the Skydiggers do their annual shows at the Horseshoe. Gord would come sometimes.
Yeah.
And it was always amazing to watch him play with them. So
totally.
Yeah. Anyway, Max, I do appreciate this time with you to talk about various things. Do you feel like we got to anything?
Yeah, we got some lots of stuff.
Okay. I feel like we covered a lot of ground, and I hope you feel like you put your points across and that I was listening and everything went well.
Hey, I want to tell you one more thing, which because it was relevant to actually what's kind of going on in the news today. It was sort of an interesting experience for me.
Oh.
So it's something I've never experienced before. And that's one of the great things about life is trying new shit. So Arkells, along with 200 other artists, signed a letter of solidarity with the Utasodden and Wet'suwet'en. I hope I got that the pronunciation right.
It was 200 initially, and it's way above 500 now. People have signed this thing.
Yeah, of course. And for me, the instinct to do that was simply because I don't think that the state should ever use force that way. And I think we always need to show, you know, compassion for groups that are suffering. And as the statement showed, you know, as the statement read, it's like, you know, Justin Trudeau has said one thing and this kind of action rejects what he said.
Yeah.
And that is a problem. And I think it's your duty as a good neighbor and a good Canadian to, you know, to shine a light on these issues. So that's where I personally came to it.
Sure.
And I felt good about it. I felt good about, you know, raising awareness in this way. So, the interesting thing that happened though afterward is, cause I feel like like most musicians would feel the same way and that's the right thing to do. We ended up getting a number of emails directed to the band account from people in mostly Alberta, I think,
yes,
who were really disappointed that Arkells signed this thing. And they, one fellow sent a bunch of information along with literature about the realities of the pipeline,
yeah,
and, you know, all these, you know, sort of just the other side of the story. And they were very mad, and one of them had tickets and he said, I don't think I'm going to come to the show anymore. And I was like, wow, okay, this is an interesting moment where I can talk to somebody who, you know, we're sort of on fundamental, like, different sides of a political conversation. Because when do we actually get a chance to have, like, a dialogue with somebody on the other side? And I love Sarah Silverman. You know, did you ever watch her show?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Talking to Americans. Yeah. And I really admire the way she, like, wants to get to know people, especially people that are much different than her. And
yeah.
I was like, yeah,
where are you
I
coming
love that
from?
Thing.
Yeah. Where are you
yeah,
coming
where you
from?
Come, yeah. Where are you coming from? That interesting. So I was like, you know what? Most of the times people like management or just like, ignore this, just whatever. Who gives a fuck? These people are crazy. That'd be most people's reaction, which I totally get as well. But I was like, you know what? I'm just going to write the guy. And so I wrote him. I was like, hey, just wanted to let you know. Thanks for reaching out. And I appreciate where you're coming from. And a lot of the things that he wrote was related to sort of like
The economic implications?
Yeah, the economic implications. There's a lot of things about oil, the nature of Canadian oil versus Saudi oil versus Venezuelan.
Yes.
Those are things that are totally out of my pay grade, which like I was like, I really can't comment on that because like I have no idea. But I just said to him, I was like, look, we've played in Alberta many times and we know what it's like to play in Fort McMurray when the whole town, like in a dip,
yeah,
where everybody's getting laid off. And I know how hard like it is for a family to become unemployed. And my heart breaks for families that have to live like with that level of instability. And all we can hope for each other is that you have some dignity and empowerment in your personal and professional life. Like, I think that's really like just a fundamental belief that I have is like, that's what we should wish for each other.
Yeah.
And I said, my signing of the statement is simply to show compassion for a group that definitely needs it right now. And I think, and it came from a heartfelt place. And I didn't want to blabber on. I just said, and I like to think that not every situation needs to be a zero sum game. Yeah, like, because I think a lot of people react in a way that's like, oh, but if this person's getting that means I'm getting fucked over here. Like,
yeah.
And I just don't believe that to be true all the time. Sometimes it is true, but sometimes it's not true. So anyway, I was like, and I was like, totally understand if you can't come on the show, but whatever. But anyway, best Max. And then he wrote back and he's like, hey, just want to say, thanks for writing me back. I was having a really bad day. I just really felt that nobody cares about Alberta and I just needed to get that off my chest. But I appreciate your thoughtful response. And I think your show in Calgary is going to, you know, be a great show. And it was just like one of these moments where it's like, it didn't have to be like, oh, that's the enemy over there. And I hope that now he has viewed the artist like ourselves. It's not somebody who hates him. It's just simply someone, we're just people who want to show compassion for this other group in this particularly trying time. Anyway, I just thought it was an interesting social experiment for me to see. I'm like, could I do the Sarah Silverman thing? Just be like, what is the root of your frustration and anger? And can I get to know it a little? And really, he just wanted to vent for a second. And sometimes people just need to vent. And unfortunately, with Twitter, people vent and then just get, and then it escalates in sort of negative ways.
Right,
but anyway, I just
right.
wanted.
But then I appreciate your point. And there's a lot going on in what you said. And I also, there's a lot of intertwining issues there in terms of socio-cultural and historical issues and economic.
There's so many. There's so many.
That's right. But I was going to say, and I'm not. And there's an ecological collapse element to this as well. The fact that we're relying on oil. I have relatives in Alberta too, and they would be incensed to know that I would have signed a document like the one that we both signed. But there's an ecological collapse aspect to this too, where action needs to happen. You know, beyond the horrible indiscretions of this government action by the RCMP. Like this is a way bigger issue than that, and that's coming to the fore more and more each day in terms of our environment and our reliance on such resources. All this to say, all I was going to say is I have found the same thing as you. I think when people send you an email or rant at you on Twitter, you are dehumanized. And as soon as you acknowledge it and write back or I used to do that all the time. I almost always would respond to the hate mail before the compliment to say, hey, I'm sorry you feel that way. And almost, I would say 95% of the time, the writer of the hate mail would be like, oh, thanks. I'm sorry. I didn't realize that you would see this or something. And I'm like, what? Yeah. Like you wrote to me or you, what are you talking about? So we're all dehumanized online. And when you send a little volley back, that humanizes the situation. And that's what you're getting at there. And I think that's what Sarah Silverman was doing too. Like let's stop dealing with all of these issues conceptually and talk to people. And
yeah, exactly. And I agree. Like, you know, it is so complicated. And the issues when it comes to, you know, the environment, it's just like, that is obviously probably more important than anything. Cause if the world's going to burn, none of us are going to be here anyway. So
that's
like,
exactly right. Yeah.
But I will also say it's like, for like a Joe like me and a Joe in Alberta to be discussing, it's just like, there's not much we can do. Like, I mean, there's things in that conversation.
Yeah. But the fact that it's coming up in a conversation between a musician and a person in Alberta tells you how pressing these issues
are. Of course.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think there's many things we can do to lobby governments and stuff. Like, for sure. Like, I think there's like, we as the people need to address this to the people in charge and make sure that they know what the fuck that we care about it. But when it comes to just like this thing about like Indigenous protesters, it's just like I think it's also important that we all try our best to see the humanity in each other.
And then we can
move forward together and we can band together and make sure that, you know, people in power are doing the right thing.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you bringing this up because I was thinking we had to wrap up and you were like, one last thing. And it was a huge thing. So I appreciate your
Yeah, no, well, I just wanted to talk about it. I was just like, I just had never had that experience. I was like, let me see how this goes. Because I think like an optimistic person and I see the goodness. I like to see the goodness in people. And I was like, I think that if I like address the person just like a human, they'll be like disarmed and we can make a connection. And I was proved right. And I felt good about it.
Yeah. Well, we talked about Rally Cry, this record that is just out. Are there plans for more Arkell's music? Or I know you've got a lot of touring up ahead, but what's going on in terms of writing?
Yeah, I mean, we're always kind of hacking away at ideas, but for the next little bit, we're kind of full on tour mode. But yeah, I mean, again, just I think as to bring it back to the beginning, just, you know, get us a deadline and we'll start working on shit.
No planned releases of any, do any surprises coming up, like one-offs?
No, nothing. I mean, we're Hand-Me-Downs is the next single, and there's like we're gonna service up the version we did with Frank Turner, an acoustic version. But for now, that's the main thing we're focusing on.
Okay, cool. Now, if people want to learn more about Arkells, where would you send them on the dehumanized internet?
Yeah, Arkells Music is Twitter and Instagram. So those are the two best spots.
Okay, cool. And Max, is there a song from Rally Cry that you would select for us to go out on right now?
Let's do Hand-Me-Downs. That's the first track. And, yeah, I think it's one of the good ones.
What do you want to say about this song? Because it has a, like I alluded to the fact earlier that, you know, I feel like you're thinking of people in, who are, you know, they feel disempowered by various things. Hand-Me-Down seems to speak to that on some level.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about just the idea of how people have like kind of complicated feelings about where they're where they come from and their family history. And I think a lot of people have pride in their family, but also there's other sort of dark corners of everyone's family history that are kind of hard to reckon with. And I think if you come from an especially complicated family, it's even harder. And so, yeah, just the idea that, like, I remember Shad actually once said in an interview, it's like, none of us chose to be here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I love that so much. It was such a kind of profound statement. I was like, oh yeah. And so and because of that, no one chose to be here. We need to be less hard on ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like no one, like, no one chose to have a fucked up uncle or to, you know, to be put up for adoption or to, you know, or to have a dad who's an alcoholic or any of these things. You're just born into these situations.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's sort of the spirit of the song. It's like, you know, from the color of your eyes to the clothes on your back, there ain't no shame in some hand-me-downs. So whatever you were born into, like, you know, have no, there's no shame in it because you didn't choose to begin with.
I did want to ask you really quickly about one thing here that led mm-hmm. me to think that you were addressing economic disparity in various ways. And displacement, first of the month, gets you stressed out and moving trucks bring you right back.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating to me. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I had a friend who told me that like seeing moving trucks is a triggering event because as a kid, they moved around a lot.
Yeah.
And then also the first of the month for my friends who didn't grow up with any money was always a really stressful time because like are their parents going to make the bills, you know? And yeah, I have a few
rent
friends,
is
like,
rent is due usually.
Rent is due. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I tried to kind of key in on smaller details that tell kind of a bigger story.
But so it's a great turn of phrase, and I will say, you know, Max, I've known you some time. I am really, for what it's worth, this is just coming from me, but I'm really marveling at your writing. It's really, really excellent, and I can see it getting better and better as you go as well, as you're thinking about things. And I just want to say, for what it's worth, I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate it. Well, I know you got great taste, so that means a lot.
All right, from their latest album, Rally Cry, this is Arkells with Hand-Me-Downs. Max, thank you so much for this time, and best of luck with everything going forward.
Yeah, cheers, Vish. Thanks so much.
You went through 5 schools before you were 17. I can only guess what his brown eyes have seen. If we're just a blank slate mixed with a little bit of DNA. And those weekend visits when you show up late. When I feel helpless, I see you smiling back at me. Like every little thing's gonna be okay. Yeah, you're a tough kid, way tougher than me. I'll put a bet on you any day. Where your head gets dizzy, you can't get right. But you push on through, don't be denied it. Shake out those ghosts in every corner of this town. From the clothes on your back to the color of your eyes. Ain't no shame in some hand-me-downs. Ain't no shame in some hand-me-downs.
in cause I'm breaking it. When your head gets dizzy and you can't get right, but you push on through, don't be denied it. Shake out those ghosts in every corner of this town. From the clothes on your back to the color of your eyes, ain't no shame for some hair.
Special thanks again to Max Kerman of Arkells for being on this, the 457th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and available on all iOS and Android platforms and other things as well. Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom, it's all everywhere, I think. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about and are looking for in any of those platforms, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my semi-regularly scheduled newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Vish Creative, or follow me directly at Vish Khanna. You can also listen to a radio show version of Creative Control on Wednesdays at noon Eastern Standard Time around the world at CFRU.ca or on an actual radio at 93.3 FM if you're in or near Guelph. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. There have been some recent pledges, so thank you very much to all of you who pledged to keep the show going. It really does mean a lot, and it really does keep the show going. So please, if you haven't already and would like to, go to patreon.com/creativecontrol and make a flexible monthly donation. Thanks again to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my good friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use one of his songs. The rest is yet to come. To end this show each week, go to jimguthrie.org for more info about him. And thank you very much for listening to this episode. If you're new to the show, welcome. There are clearly 456 other episodes somewhere on the internet, so have a listen. I think you might enjoy it. I'm proud of the show, and if you've been listening all this time, thank you. And thank you for spreading the word about it, telling your friends to listen to it. That means a lot. All right, I have to go, but I will talk to you very soon. Bye for now.
It's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.